Well, hold your papers up high. Forget all your worries. Well, troubled poets can't die. They're the meat of the story.
Good morning and welcome to Voices in the Valley, where we celebrate the creative spirit and nurture the art of storytelling. My name is Steph, and today we continue phoning LA as we converse with actor and film producer Clayton Snyder. Last week we spoke with LA composer Will Thomas in an interview you can hear by subscribing to Voices in the Valley's podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. This week, Clayton Snyder talks to myself and student host Emma about what it's like to be on the set of Lizzie McGuire versus a film or web episode, and also discusses with Emma how a young actor can find an agent. Ready? Set? Here we go.
This is Steph. I'm on the phone with Clayton Snyder, an actor from LA with extensive film, television, and web series credits, including playing the role of Ethan Kraft on the Disney Channel series Lizzie McGuire and the film adaptation, The Lizzie McGuire Movie. Clayton, welcome to Voices in the Valley. I'm so glad you were able to Skype on in and join us.
That is, Stephanie. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is certainly exciting to me to be able to interview someone who has so many projects currently going on. Just so that the listener knows, you're not only an actor, but you are an actor who has done some modeling and singing. You also coach in acting and improvisation and public speaking. And if I'm understanding correctly, I, myself, if I wanted acting lessons, could Skype on in and hire you to be my coach. Is that right?
We can do it right now if you want.
Well, I must say I would be very interested in that, but I am not so sure our listeners would find that quite as intriguing. So as
Range check.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Just so I don't lose any details about that. Why don't we, this is a little unusual to insert, you know, take me to your website while I'm doing an introduction, but hey, this is going to be an anything goes interview. So take me to your website. Tell me how I sign up for that, because I'd love an acting lesson. That would be awesome.
No holds barred. Well, it's fairly simple. You can go to ClaytonSnyder.com. Pretty clear on the main page, a little tab for coaching, and all your info's right there and an email address at the bottom in case you're interested. Pretty much goes for a range of things from, as you said, acting to improvising to just public speaking. So if you're interested, please check it out.
Awesome. And do you have an age limit? Do you work with teenagers and older people like me?
No, yeah. There's no age limit or range.
Wow. Okay, this is an opportunity that I am just going to have to take up, because how cool is that to say that you took coaching lessons from someone like you who has been involved in so many aspects of the acting endeavor, including short films, feature films, TV, web series, all of that. I mean, it's just like so many goodies that you've done, Clayton. I'm a little uncertain where to start. So let's just delve right in to what you're doing right now, because I know you have a production company called A Beautiful Risk Productions, and that you are currently producing a film called Beautiful Risk. So let's just start right there. Tell me about your production company. When did it begin? And tell me a little bit about the film.
Sure. It began a couple months ago, really.
Wow.
Where it started was, a friend of mine that I made over the past couple of years, we met on a men's retreat through a church that we were going to. He, you know, we got to talking. He was a director. I was an actor. And we met up for coffee a couple weeks later and continued to getting to know each other and hearing, you know, each other's stories. And there have been a couple projects since then that he asked if I was interested in being involved with. I said, of course, you know, as an actor, you're always looking for different opportunities. And later on, he asked myself and a few other of his friends that I hadn't met yet. And we're getting together at his place. It's a funny scenario of all of us being there, but not really knowing each other, but knowing that Ricky invited us all together. And we're just like kind of hanging out, not thinking much of it. He made dinner, and, you know, an hour and a half goes by and he's like, okay, I'm sure you're wondering why I invited you guys over tonight. We're like, yeah.
Kind of curious.
Yeah, we're curious. And, you know, I'm the kind of guy who will be like, doesn't really matter. We're just I met some new friends, and that's good enough for me. It's a cool lineup.
Good food, and new friends.
He says, "Well, I wanted to bring you all in on an opportunity. I have a concept for a feature film that I want to make, and I feel called to bring you gentlemen in together on this process. So one of them as another actor, one of them as a director, another one as a producer, and it's all working together as producers as well to make this film happen." So that's where the concept of this film started. It's a romantic comedy, and we had recently run a successful Kickstarter to raise $10,000 to help get it off the ground. We took a location scouting trip to San Francisco, where we hope to shoot the film, or at least where the film will be based, and to hire out for location budgeting, so that we know how much it would cost to film in what cities, so that we can pitch that to potential studios as we shop it around. So right now the script is being finalized. This last stages of development before we start reaching out to other named talent cast to attach and run from there.
That's awesome. And I want to hear about the story for A Beautiful Risk. But first, I have a couple more questions about the production of it and your production company.
Sure.
So you mentioned all getting together in that room to begin to collaborate on the project. Do you each have your own separate roles, or did you all also work on the script, or how did the content for this come together?
Sure. It was put together by our team leader, I would say. His name is Richard Allen. Wonderful man, very talented, very smart. And he is the writer of the project. So I'd say executive producer and writer for this. And so he's been mainly in charge of the story. We've had a table reading as well, where we're able to give notes and feedback. And he's always open to our ideas and stuff like that. And I believe he's gotten some coverage on it, because the story is really what's most important, you know?
Absolutely.
And that starts with the script. And as I've come back into the acting world after a long hiatus from acting in my youth, I have come to really and increasingly value writers and understanding their world and how we all really depend on them to make things happen, you know, because that's where it all starts. That's where the magic begins. So that's been his process. And as far as everyone else's roles, we're all pitching in wherever our talents may lie. As far as helping things move forward, it's all hands in wherever anyone can help. So the role of a producer in any film can be pretty loose. Whereas if you have a hand in helping make it happen, you're just producing this product, whatever that means.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Could you tell me a little bit about a couple of the short films you've done, and then maybe even explain how the production of that and being involved in that might be a little bit different from feature?
Sure. One would be the budget.
Yes.
Typically, you write a short film is a short film simply because that's the best medium for that story to be told. It doesn't have the breadth to be a feature, but it's definitely more than a sketch or a scene, right? So it can call for it just by the form of the story itself. But a lot of times it's just what you have available. And a lot of times a short film can be a great launching platform for actors or for directors or producers who want more experience and who perhaps desire, and if you want to be just like a short filmmaker, like that's fantastic. But a lot of times you'll see people aspiring to be feature-length directors creating short films to, one, give them the experience in creating a film with a little bit less at stake and a little bit less of the overall complexity and workload that goes into a full-length feature, and as well as there are tons of short film festivals around the country and the world that take submissions for these short films, and it really gives opportunity for exposure if you can give a quality product in, you know, a bite-sized, manageable, like 20, 25 minutes that can show that you can tell a story well. You know, that's why film festivals are such a big thing, because a lot of these, especially for independents, that can be a great launching platform for bigger deals with studios or other producers or investors.
Oh, yeah, that makes so much sense. Well, and don't you sort of feel like the future is going to look very different than what we know today, that there's some new model or some new way of doing things that's going to seem so outrageous, but then once it happens, everyone is going to be like, oh yeah, oh absolutely, you know, there's
yeah, it's just exponentially, I think. And I was actually listening to a great podcast by the guy named Kurt Mega, C-U-R-T-M-E-G-A. He's got a good podcast called Story Matters, and he had on a good friend of mine, director William J. Stribling, who directed one of these web series I was on, Edgar Allan Poe's Murder Mystery Dinner Party, or just Poe Party. And yeah, check that out, Poe Party on YouTube. And he was talking about how in the past, being a director, because he's a writer, director, producer, and primarily director, saying how in the past it was a little bit more like your other 9-to-5s, where there was somewhat of a trajectory that you could take in your career as a director to get where you wanted to go. And it's just becoming more and more muddled on what that looks like. And instead of having a like trajectory that's a straight line, it's much more crooked or squiggly, or, you know, it can go back and forth, left and right. Have to kind of say yes to opportunities that are in front of you, and you don't know where those will take you, because it's kind of it's too hard to really pigeonhole yourself as one thing these days. I think that's one of the biggest changes, is that I like to tell people how in the past it used to be the triple threat was, oh, he can sing, act, and dance. Yeah. And oh, he's like so talented. And now it's like, if you can do that, yeah, that's cool. But like the real power goes to people who can act, produce, and write their own content.
So I love
content, produce it, and act in it. Like, yes, that's the new triple threat to really find your entry point in that business. And if that's intimidating to you, you know, then you better have a great team of people around you who are writers or producers that you can like work together. So you either gotta go lone wolf or have some like dedicated partners that you're doing that with, to advance that. Because even with auditioning these days, like, there just, it seems like fewer and fewer auditioning opportunities, because everyone, you know, if these studios, if they have people making their own things, why would they pump in money to try to make a pilot? You know, everyone's doing it for them. So they're just going to continue with that model. And then people are producing their own content and starring themselves in it. It means there's less auditioning for it. Yeah, of course, there's going to be auditions to fill out, you know, guest stars, co-stars for various roles. But a lot of it is people bringing their own vision to the screen. You have a ton of Netflix shows like that, these writer, producer, actors creating their own content and putting it up, and then their career kind of takes off from there. So that's a model that's increasingly encouraged to follow.
I love that the new triple threat is to write, produce, and act. I couldn't agree more. I think that makes so much sense. And I think it's an important thing for students to know too, as they think about their careers and as they move forward in them. And actually, I'm going to do things a little non-traditionally here, because as we're talking about this triple threat, Emma has come into the room, and I'm going to have her join us in this conversation. Let's just turn it over to Emma here, because I know she's got some questions for you.
Absolutely. Hey, Emma.
Hey, Clayton.
Yep, hello.
Nice to meet you.
You as well.
Emma, I think, would love to do all three of those things, write, produce, and act.
Yeah, I think I love the process of it. I'm fascinated by the behind the scenes. So I know you've worked on both a TV show and a movie set, right?
Sure, yeah.
Is there a difference in how it's run or the process of getting it made?
Sure. So for TV especially, and this is kind of more, you know, with Lizzie McGuire, it was through Disney, right? So I don't know what if an experience on a Netflix show might be different, because you have it. It's kind of a new format to have all the episodes put up at one time,
right?
So that everyone could binge watch it. So their filming schedule may look a little bit different, but if you're looking at something that comes out on a weekly basis with a new episode, it's pretty common that there'll be an episode shot in 5 days. And so that being considered, it is very much a machine that has to run very efficiently, when there are a lot of people involved in helping make that happen. So there can be a little bit more concern making sure everything's done on time and hopefully under budget. So there's a little bit, you know, you're clocking in and clocking out at certain times, whereas on a film, you have more leeway, and I feel, not to say that you can just take forever, some filmmakers do and have, but on a film, it's kind of, let's make sure we get this right.
Right.
For one, you have to consider the medium that this project is going to be viewed on, whether that's YouTube or a television set or a projected image on in a movie theater. And size matters big time in the amount of detail that's in the shot and the amount of like truth that you're reading off the TV. Now we're in a new golden age of television, so the TV acting and quality today is through the roof. But before, I think acting might have taken a back seat to just making like an entertaining show for a little while on TV. Whereas, you know, film, if your face is blown up however many feet big, it just matters a lot to have a really, you know, good, truthful moment in there that people can connect with. Because the bigger that screen is, the more important that can be. So that's the base of it, is that it's kind of your time constraints, ultimately.
That makes sense. This is cheesy, and I'm sure you get this question a lot, but what made you want to become an actor?
Sure. Not cheesy at all. I think that's a very valid question, always. No stupid questions here. For me, I grew up, you know, loving watching movies and TV, particularly comedies, and just loved, I just memorized quotes and would be quoting things all the time and impersonating characters I would see and people I would see. And I don't think I needed to be the center of attention. Maybe I did. You know, some people were aware of that, like, oh, I always need to be like the center of attention. Like, I don't think so. I just liked entertaining people and especially making people laugh. It was just very fulfilling for me. And that, I also give a lot of credit to my elementary school, Magad Elementary School in Seal Beach, where they had school musicals, but only the upperclassmen, the fourth and fifth graders, could partake in them. So I grew up as a kid watching the fourth and fifth graders performing these musicals, and I thought that's what like the cool big kids did. So I like aspired to do that. And in fourth grade, it was my first year, the play was Tom Sawyer, or Adventures of Tom Sawyer, whatever it was. And I wanted to be Tom Sawyer, dang it. And they ran through the audition process, whatever that was, I don't even remember. And they announced the characters and who was who. And I got the part of Mark Twain, and I was heartbroken. Who is Mark Twain? Like, not only did I not get Tom Sawyer, I didn't get Huckleberry Finn. I got this old dude, apparently. Like, I don't even know how he relates to like the story of Tom Sawyer. So I left, like, my dad still has the voicemail saved of me being like, hey dad, I got the part of Mark Twain, you know, you might not know who he is. And it turns out he was the narrator of the entire play, and I was sitting in a chair on the audience side of the curtain for the entire show and had to memorize pages and pages of dialogue for myself. And when I brought home the script and my parents looked at it, it was like, there is no way he could do this. Like, it's way too much. And it came pretty easily, and it was just fine. I naturally improvised as a youngster, and had a great time doing it. And they're like, okay, there might be something to this. And the next year I got, this is an interesting lesson for me to learn, it was, the play was Wizard of Oz, and I really wanted to be the Cowardly Lion. Like, what a fun, funny character. And then some, like, not only girl, but a girl who I didn't think was like funny at all. Like if like a funny girl got it, like that's great. But like, I didn't understand why she got the part. And like, I felt slighted. And I got announced as the Tin Man, who I thought was just like the wussiest guy. Like, the silver paint on his face made it look like he was wearing lipstick. And like, that bothered me. And like, I just had all these like, you know, issues with the role. And I was like, I don't want to be the Tin Man. He's like, why not? I said, he's not funny. He's like, well, you can make him funny. He's like, I can make him funny? He's like, yeah. It's like, it's you. You can do whatever you want with the role. I was like, huh, interesting. And like, the thought process also being behind, like, you could have been like a great Lion, Clay, don't get me wrong, but no one could bring life to the Tin Man like you can. So it's like, interesting. So I don't know if like that was just her ploy to try to get out of that conversation, or I just took this truth as time went on. I think that's absolutely true. That was a great lesson to learn, and how there's value in every single character in a story. So from there, started doing community theater in Lakewood and more dramatic stuff, and my parents talked about possibly doing it professionally. And my mom looked at a thing in Backstage West, a magazine at the time, it's the Now website pretty much, and saw a thing for like a manager workshop that could potentially get you an agent that costs an exuberant amount of money, as they do sometimes. And she thought it was still kind of a scam, but it still worked. And I managed to get an agent, and I was auditioning for a year and a half of getting nothing, you know, callbacks here and there. And eventually my first booking, real booking, was for the Liz McGuire show.
So do you think an agent is really important to a beginning actor?
Yes. An agent is, like, no matter where you are, if you have an agent that really believes in you, they're going to have a voice that producers, casting directors will trust, that they have a relationship with, that say like, hey, for this role, you need to see this person, and they go off their credibility. Mm-hmm. That's why there are agencies that are like better than others, because of the power of their relationship with certain people, that if they vouch for someone, they get a green light into the room always, right?
Right.
After you get into smaller agencies or boutique agencies, they don't necessarily shoot for like the biggest roles. They shoot for everything that's kind of more mid-level. And those are the relationships that they have. And it can, you can still get a lot of great work doing that, but it's just kind of a different market, and you can always progress yourself up. You know, it's not uncommon for people to leave agencies as they find themselves in different places in their career. But as far as like just starting out, yes, it's important to get an agent as opposed to, you know, a manager or something else. A manager can also be very helpful. They're more career focused and they're more personal with you. They're more of a guiding touch to see where you're going long term and help you kind of strategize over what you're targeting and help you find relationships with agents or casting directors, etc. And an agent is really more focused on the roles that are coming out and getting you in that room, because that's all they have time for, honestly. So yes, that's important, but you can't necessarily make it all about getting the agent, because product comes first, right? Then you need to be able, because if you get a meeting somehow with a fantastic agent, but you can't act, that's a whole other thing, right? So that's got to be number one.
You mentioned you found an agent through a sort of competition. What's the best way, or is there a best way on how to find an agent?
Nope, no best way. I'll give you an example. I met my most recent agent because I had left my former agent because we just wasn't getting opportunities with them. And that's the, kind of the nature of the business. Sometimes someone could even take you on and you get an agent. And a lot of actors can be like, oh, if I just get an agent, then I'll be successful. And they'll give me the opportunities I need and I'll show them and I'll be a star. And that's not really the case. More so, it's you get an agent and you need to hustle on your own just as much as you were beforehand. Now you just have another force working for you alongside. So I had an agent and I just wasn't feeling the benefits of that relationship. I was without representation for a little bit, and I found myself on the set of a web series called Dream Job with some lovely people, Lindsay Schubert and Kate Krasowski. And Kate was one of the producers of that show, and she was also an assistant at a talent agency, and she was naturally sharing her journey making this project with her boss, who was a theatrical agent, theatrical meaning for film and TV, not necessarily for theater. And she liked the series and saw me in it and asked about me and said, hey, like, who represents him? She's like, I don't know, I'll ask. And so she emailed me and said, hey, my agent was wondering if you'd be willing to have a meeting. Are you interested? And I said, yeah, sure, let's do it. So I met with her, hit it off. And so she's been my agent since. So just comes so randomly. And there are workshops around where you can just Google theatrical agent workshop or theatrical agent showcase, where you can pay a little bit of money to have the opportunity to do some work in front of some agents. And it's not necessarily for employment. They would say it's for educational purposes, mm-hmm. where an agent will give you feedback. It's like, okay, if I were to have you as a client, like, these would be my notes for you. But, you know, if they like what they see, they have no reason not to contact you and try to fill the meeting. And other places will have showcases where they'll put on, like 10 to 20 people will put on several scenes over a show and invite as many producers, casting directors, agents, managers as they can, theatrical, commercial, what have you. Invite all these people to see their show, and if they can make it, follow up after, hey, hope you enjoyed it. And sometimes with their follow up or their hit up by these people to say, hey, enjoyed your work. We'd love to have a meeting with you, and then see if things would work out from there. So there's really no one way. I would say another, probably the strongest way, is one, is to see your work, and two is by referral. So as you are in the industry, it is natural to continue to meet more and more and more people. If you're not crazy, and if you're a decent person and enjoyable to work with and are a good communicator and you're accountable and you do good work, then you establish really great relationships with people who understand that this industry is all about these relationships. They say it's, you know, not what you can do, it's who you know. But I think it's about who you know that likes you and respects your work. There's a little bit more to it than that. If you, as you spend time in it, you're going to meet more and more people, and you'll meet people, if you're an actor, who are other actors, and they have representation. And can't emphasize more how important fostering these relationships are. Yes, you want to make friends on a set and then say, hey, see you around, but it's so rare in this industry to really follow up with that and be like, and then actually text people or call them or email them or Facebook message them or tweet, whatever you have at your disposal, to be like, hey, like, had a great time working with you, would love to hang out and get to know you more. And 9.5 times out of 10, they'll say, would love to, or I'm really crazy right now, let me hit you up in a couple of weeks, and say, great. Then you follow up yourself and you talk to them and you're like, okay, like, you know, I'm with this, you have representation. Yeah, I'm with this agency. Okay, great. And then if you feel it's appropriate, say like, hey, like, would you be open to possibly like referring me to your agent or manager, whatever you're looking for? And the right response is from them is to, if they are open to doing that, to, hey, let me see if they're taking on any more clients, because a lot of people simply don't have the bandwidth to take on any more at that time. It's, you know, no harm or foul on that. But if they are, if they're interested, I'll let you know. Say, okay, great. You know, the worst you can do is ask, and the answer is no, right?
Right.
And so I think that's a great way to go about it, because you have a relationship going in. Some people do headshot, like or material drop-offs, where if they have like a reel of their work on like a CD or a thumb drive, their resume, their headshot, a cover letter, bio, whatever, in like a manila folder, and then you hand it off to an agency or a casting office and kind of hope for the best. Maybe, but so many people are doing that, and it's like, if you're going to have a first impression, you would want it through someone that they trust as opposed to a random drop-off.
And with that said, where is the best place for people like me to go to find out more information about all of your projects?
You can follow me on Instagram at Hey Claytron, HeyClayTron. I like to post updates on things that are going on there. The same handle on Twitter. My website is ClaytonSnyder.com, and I have a news page up there for other things like that. And those are probably the best places to reach me.
Wonderful. So that's like, hey, Clayton, for your Instagram and Twitter handles.
Yeah, but with an R. So, hey, Claytron.
Oh, okay. All right. You better spell that one more time so I haven't
made sure,
water.
Sure,
it's
sure.
Difficult
H-E-Y? H-E-Y-C-L-A-Y-T-R-O-N.
Okay. Hey, Claytron. All right. I love it. That's awesome. Well, Clayton Snyder, thank you so much for taking the time to call in from LA and speak with me and Emma today on Voices in the Valley. We really appreciate it. And I can guarantee you there are going to be a lot of young actors who will be hanging on your every word when it comes to the discussion about getting an agent and taking those next steps in the career. And I will not forget, and I hope you will give me permission to continue to repeat, the new triple threat is to be an actor, a writer, and was it a producer or a director?
I mean, either or, but producer.
Or producer. Is director in that triple threat at all?
It can be. It could be a quadruple threat if you want.
Yeah, yeah. But of the four, you would say actor, producer, and writer.
Yes.
That makes sense. Clayton, thank you so much for being on Voices in the Valley.
Been a blessing. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Voices in the Valley and the interview with Clayton Snyder. Find us every week at 10 a.m. on KLBB 1220 and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. Next week, the season finale of Hush.